Welcome to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch by interviewing authors, discussing their books, learning about the writing process, and even, on occasion, chatting live with a panel of authors to discuss topics relevant to both readers and writers. My guest today on the Online for Authors podcast is Crystal Clark, author of the book Balance of Power, the first in the Chosen Path series. Crystal, a budding fantasy author, discovered the enchanting world of writing as a refuge for emotional expression during her childhood. Determined to redefine the essence of fantasy, she decided to embark on her own literary quest, focusing not on fantastical worlds, but on the characters within them, characters as human and complex as ourselves. In my book review, I stated that although not typically a fantasy reader, I do enjoy a well-written fantasy with strong characters, and Crystal provides just that. In Balance of Power, we see different orders looking for the Chosen, the one the Great Spirit has sent to rule the Earth. We follow the Chosen from infancy through early adulthood as he trains and learns and begins to accept his role. But not everyone is happy, and there are some who wish to steal the Chosen for their own order, because the order with the boy has immense power over the future. I enjoyed the characters and the world, though different from my own, had enough similarities that I didn't get bogged down. The only thing I didn't like was the cliffhanger at the end. Of course, Crystal has ensured that I will read the next installment. Welcome to Online for Authors. Today, I am chatting with Crystal B. Clark, who is the author of Balance of Power, which is part of the Chosen Path series. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Terry.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you. Now, I said that right. Is it Chosen Path?
Yes, that is
okay,
right.
Okay, because it's spelled C-H-O-Z-I-E-N, and I kept saying chosen in my mind and then thought, I hope that's correct.
It is.
Okay. Well, can you give us like just a really quick, what is your book about? Like if you had to do an elevator pitch, what would it be?
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm. So this is a supernatural fantasy series that crosses the chasm, if you will, of spirituality and science. And yeah. And so I really wanted to focus on character development and have an underlying theme that created not only diversity of characters and cultures, but also talk about the things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis that we don't think about that stress us out. So for example, abandonment, mm-hmm, and how that plays into every choice that we make, how we respond to people, how we manifest that into our day-to-day life subconsciously, and how we continue to do things to chase something like that. Either we're running away from it or we're trying to clear our guilty conscience of it. Now, there's always plot intrigue because it's fantasy, yeah, you know, so it's plenty of that going on.
It should.
At the end of the day, I really wanted to focus on a message in the book.
Okay, so you wanted to focus on a message, which I understand because I write historical fiction, but I also focus on messages. Like that's a thing that I do. Why did you choose fantasy to do it versus all the other genres that you had the option to choose from?
Well, frankly, I love fantasy.
Okay.
But I felt that it gave me a level of freedom to create the message in a much more powerful way than I could have done if it was just in a normal day to day. Because okay, we live day to day every day.
Right.
So for me to add that level of spark, spontaneity, and pizzazz, I had to create a different world that not only kind of mimicked ours, but allowed me to stretch beyond my imagination.
Right.
That's really what I wanted.
Right. I loved. So I'm going to just like be upfront. Most people who know me know I'm not a fantasy reader.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No. And so when you said you had a fantasy, I thought, okay, well, I mean, I'll read it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So I've read two fantasies and loved both. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I am a fantasy reader and just didn't realize that I'm a fantasy reader. But you said something in the beginning that touched me, which was you like character development. And I think that's why I connected so much with the story is I write characters. That's what I do. I tell people that I invite, that I introduce people to characters they'd love to invite to lunch. And that's, you know, that's kind of my thing. And I love to read books with strong characters. And I think maybe some of the fantasy that I had read earlier on maybe was more place driven than it was, you know, it was the world building. And not that yours didn't have it, because fantasy has to have some world building in it. But I didn't feel like I got bogged down in the world building. I felt like I was enjoying the characters and learning about where they lived at the same time.
Yes. So. You're nailing it. Nailing it. That's what I was going for. I stopped reading fantasy for 20 years because of that. There was not enough connection to the characters. I'm like, man, if this next book is the same adventure over and over again, I can't do it. I can't do it. Yeah.
And so for me, it's always, I don't know, as a writer, I have trouble building a world anyway. It's not one of my strong suits. And often when I am reading a fantasy, especially a long one, and they're often very long, I feel like I'm just flip, 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 flip. There's the character. And then I miss things that are very important because I flipped through all the world building. And you didn't do that. You offered the world building almost through character development. Like I learned what I needed to learn as I needed to learn it.
Yep.
And so you did an excellent job that way. You should like pat yourself on the back. That was really good. And this is coming from a non-fantasy reader. So, you know, and so when I was done and enjoyed it and thought, oh, now I have to read the next one, I thought, wow, she did a really good job. You helped convert me. Do you think that you'll ever write a different genre?
Yes. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I actually have a business memoir in the works right now, and it's actually done. I've manuscripted, so I'm in the editing phase. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, this one is about the lessons I learned through my 8-year stint in the IT consulting world.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was very much about, it's really, my brand is emotional resilience. So hopefully you could see that in the.
Yes.
Okay. And so what happened is when I got into consulting, by the time I had hit consulting, I had emotional intelligence. So I knew these feelings. I was okay with expressing these feelings and I knew where they're coming from, but I didn't know how to manage them when things got challenging. So everything that I was, you know, if I was doing something and someone asked me a question about my work, I took that as like, I got defensive because I'm like, oh, what, you don't think I know what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah. Like, what are you trying to say here? Right.
Yes. Yes. And so I realized that was holding me back from being a good leader because I was managing people. It was not a problem to manage people, but I couldn't, people were fearing me. They were fearing to ask me questions. They were very tense. And so I started to understand that and let my guard down because I was giving a perception that wasn't me based on my reactions
to things.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So this idea, you kind of hinted at, you know, like you wanted to bring out problems that people experience every day and like bring them out. But where did the actual idea for this book come from? Like, you know, to say, oh, I want to talk about problems. There's like a bazillion ways that you could have come at this. Where did this idea kind of stem from?
The idea of the book or the idea to
the
just
book.
Right. Okay. So
yeah, we'll get to your writing.
So I have a strong relationship with a younger brother, my younger brother. We're about 2.5 years apart. And I remember growing up just having this huge responsibility to lead him, to guide him, to protect him. all these things. And if I slipped onto something, it was just like, I mean, it was like the weight of Atlas on me. And I remember being also being the oldest, my parents were like raising me to be all these things and to do all these, have all these responsibilities. And it was interesting because I was in, try not to get emotional, but I was in maybe my junior year in college and my brother was in his senior year. And my mom called me and she said, you know, your brother wrote, had an assignment and he had to write about a role model. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. And she's like, it was you. He wrote about you. And she just was like, Chris, I want you to understand you're a great person. You did a great job. And I'm 40, I'm about to be 42. He's 39 and he still follows me, you know?
Right.
And I wanted to write a book about a sibling relationship like that, where one felt that they had everything in their life. They felt like they belonged. They felt that they were loved, and where the other one didn't, but wanted it.
But wanted it bad.
Yeah. And yeah. So there are other pieces of the story that build on various areas of that, but you feel abandoned. You feel abandoned in life. And it's just, I had trauma growing up. I was a child molested. I was molested as a child. And just how my parents reacted to that, to being an introvert. You just felt like you never belonged and you were doing all these things to either protect yourself from that or trying to find worth because you feel like you're not worth anything.
Right.
But right. That. So you're right. Just fighting yourself this entire time. So yeah, that's why I went away.
Yeah, so that's where it came from. So how much of you is in this book?
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
I spread it across the characters. So
the characters,
so
yeah.
Intense.
Yeah. So, you know, that's interesting because people ask me the same question. You know, like how much of you are in your characters? And I don't know how to write a character that isn't either me as I am now or me as I once was, mm-hmm. or sometimes even me as I hope to be.
Yeah.
You know, like me imagining, like, what do I hope? Where do I hope I'm going with all of this growth of mine? You know, like, and so I pull all of that. And then, of course, I pick and choose from a lot of other people I know, too.
Yeah.
You know, where you pick little quirks and things and whatnot. Your dialogue was wonderful.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the dialogue back and forth. It didn't feel stilted. And sometimes to me, dialogue can feel like, is that the way people would really talk to one another? Like,
yeah.
it doesn't feel natural. But yours felt very natural as well. So, yeah. Who in your, you know, you have a wealth of characters, right? Who's your favorite? Which character is your favorite?
Ani.
Yeah? Why is that?
She's my grandmother.
Okay.
She's my grandmother. A little bit of my mom.
Yeah.
But a very loving character. Someone who is very self-aware of who she is, what position she has, and the challenges that having that position would bring and taking that on. Right. Very, very confident, very self-aware. I wanted a character that just was just super, like just a superhero to me and carried it with such humbleness. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It
was just, yeah. She was perfect, but not so perfect that you hated her. Cause most of the time you don't like perfect characters.
Yes.
You know? Like humanity is kind of funny to say when you're talking about fantasy, but yeah, she had humanity to her, you know, like you felt that. All right. Which one was the character you disliked the most? Do you have one?
So I'm going to say it is there. Very Zeke. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I do dislike him, but you have to read it. You'll find out throughout the series. That's why I dislike them, because I know
what's coming.
Yes. Yes.
But then again, all books should have that too.
Yeah.
Characters that we love, characters that we don't. But even then, even with characters that you don't love, you do a really good job of balancing them out, so that, you know, you can have a character that you don't love, but you can maybe see why, or mm-hmm. get their motivations anyway, and at least yes. understand where they're coming from, even if you don't agree. You know,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's
so it. So even if you were having, you know, conversation with them and you'd be saying, you are out of your mind, you can at least say, but I know where you're coming from.
Yep. Yeah.
And I really liked that. Were there any times that you wanted to shake a character?
Trenton. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Branton.
Branton.
Branton. Yes. 100% of the time. Like, as I was writing it, I'm like, you idiot. You know,
you've got to, like, stop. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I couldn't. It was just one of those days where I'm like, dude, get, you know what I mean? But I was like, this is life. This is what life. People do. They really do this.
Right. So. Right. And I think that's one of the reasons why I felt a real connection with the book, is that even though it was a fantasy and the world was not my world, and there were things that happened that cannot happen in my world, it didn't feel so far from my world that I couldn't make a connection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I use words like humanity and other things because it felt real despite it not being real.
Yeah. Just
that.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was, like I said, I'm really kind of shocked, just because I would have said not usually my genre, but this time it was. Now this is book one. How many books do you hope will be in?
In this series?
This series.
Three.
Yeah.
Three. Okay. I plan to have a spinoff series of this one, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to ask, and now, now I know. So no, that's good. When is the second one coming?
Goodness. So let me tell you, the moment that I it was like, as soon as I was as I'm editing the current book, I was writing the sequel. Okay. And then when I finished the editing and got into design and all this other stuff, oh goodness, I forgot to promote and market this bad boy, and it's coming out soon. So I've been spending the past, I don't know, maybe 6 months marketing, and I had written all halfway through. So I think I have 130 pages of my sequel done. And I would be done by now if I hadn't been marketing so much. So I'm just getting back to writing it now. I'm thinking I'll probably get it ready to be edited, and I'm hopeful by May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that would be good. I mean, I could wait that long, I think. So that is something that we can chat about just for a minute, is this tug and pull of an author who also has to, you have to write and you have to market. And where is that? You know, you talk about your book is called Balance of Power, right?
Yes.
Balance of Power. But there's a lot of balance in being an author as well. You know, when you think about it, like if you do nothing but write, that's wonderful if you don't plan to sell your book.
Right.
Right. If you don't care that anyone ever reads it. On the other hand, if you do nothing but market, you don't have anything for those that you've marketed to read. And you have to find that balance. How hard has that been for you?
Oh, man, it was so hard in the beginning, because I wanted to find a way to get my book out there, because I knew the message. I knew how powerful this book is. I know what this book will do. And I was just thinking, man, but so will the second one's going to kill it as well. So I knew I had to follow the process.
Right.
And as I was going through everything, I started to realize I need help. Let's just say it, right? And I'm not one to ask for it. Hopefully you see that in a character. Okay.
So, do it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started reaching out to a few folks to help me. I had a few bad runs, but I got to a point where I'm starting to do a book funnel. I'm starting to work with another website and business consultant to really help me hone in on a lot of these activities that I need help with, because I have a lot of material that can be shared on social media. I just don't have the time. So if I can get someone to help manage that, now I'll have time.
Right.
So I did that.
Right. And so that is the thing that you have to do, is you have to figure out, like, what do you want to do? How can you do it? Can you do it all yourself? Do you have to farm some of it out? You know, how do you feel about farming stuff out? Who would you farm it out to? All of the things that are, and as a new author, so my first book came out just a little over 2 years ago, and I didn't know I was supposed to market.
Right.
Like, I didn't know at all. The book came out and I literally sat in front of the computer like, why isn't it selling?
Right.
You know, and it was like, oh, you mean I have to tell people that it's here, you know? And so it kind of like opened up the whole world. And I feel like I've kind of got my marketing in a groove at this point where I know what needs to be done and I kind of get it done. And sometimes I feel overwhelmed by it. In the last month, I've been saying to myself, maybe I need an assistant. And then it's like, yeah, but it's going to slow down in a little bit. And it's like, yeah, you might really need an assistant. So I'm going back and forth. So I know that feeling. I do. It's there's so much, you know, and it's hard to know which things are the right things. And I think part of that is there is no right answer. It has a lot to do with like who you are and how you feel about things. So you said you're an introvert. I'm not.
No. Okay.
And so for me, like getting on, I love being on podcasts. Stick me on as many as you want to. I'll do 3 a day. I mean, this is great for me. Let's just get out there. And then for some people, being on a podcast is like, you know, they have to work themselves up to it and they feel dread for 4 days and they want to throw up and all of the things. In which case, maybe that's not the best marketing tool,
mm-hmm.
right? Because why feel that way? There are other things that also can work, you know,
True.
like Facebook ads, they don't make you throw up, you know,
yes.
it's a whole different thing. So you have to kind of look and pick and choose out of the huge variety of things,
yes.
right?
Yes.
What are you finding is working for you? I know you're still, that's the way I feel. I tell people I keep throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks, you know?
Yeah. I can tell you this. Okay. So I have a unique style. And that's one point you brought up is it has to, the market, the person.
Has to who fit I'm, you.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes I have a little trouble with that because the kind of posts that I make, they're very fantasy driven, but they're also insightful.
Yeah.
So like, for example, I did one with a telescope and it was like someone who read it was like, man, where are you getting this stuff from? You know? And it's like, pulling stuff, it's just so creative. You have to go beyond the box with me.
Right.
Not many people do that. They're like, well, this was what works. I'm like, but it's not me. It's not me though. And I can't compromise on that. So what I did notice is that there's a difference between putting up like an image with like whatever, a quote on it versus a reel. Okay.
Reels
I love
work.
Reels.
Yeah.
Okay. I love reels. I love them. But what I noticed is when I was on LinkedIn and Instagram, I got more likes for the image than I did for the reel. And I was like, are you kidding me? This reel is cinematic. It's like, do you guys not watch movie trailers and then go see the movie? You see what I'm saying? I would think that it would work, but it was like, it wasn't like that. And then I reached out to people and asked them like, listen, here's this. But I want to hear from you guys. What do you like? And the comments that were coming back, I like the photos. I like the photos.
And, you know, it's funny because so many marketers right now are all about the reels. Put the reels out. Put the reels out. Put the reels out. And like you, I'm not finding a lot there. Now, I am not big on TikTok. And apparently, you know, maybe TikTok is where the reels are making a big deal.
Yeah.
But for me now, not for you. I think for you, you would find readers on TikTok, but my genre, My readers are 50 plus women.
Okay.
I mean, that tends to be where they are. Now, I mean, I have all ages that read the book. It's not that, but like that would be the age group. They're not on TikTok. They're never going to see anything that I put there. And so I haven't put a lot of effort into my TikTok. You, on the other hand, I would think that with a fantasy and a series, that your age group is younger than mine in terms of like who's going to pick it up.
Yeah.
And so you never know. Maybe Reels and TikTok is where you should, you know, take a look. I know. I feel the same way. Trust me. I'm just saying that it might actually, maybe that's where your cinematic Reels would, you know, catch. Like it's a different place. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been using YouTube. I do shorts.
Yeah.
So when I make my post, video post, and then I implement that into a Reel. So I'll reuse it. But I post on TikTok and YouTube Shorts, but I don't do it as frequently as I do the image posts.
Right.
And that's one of the feedback that I got was like, oh, you need to go on TikTok. I'm like, I'm on there. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not using it like you're doing these other posts. And I'm like,
right. Yeah. And so maybe that's where the person that you've hired might come in and help you get more of those put out. Because that is true. People who are listening to those shorts and the Reels and the things, they want lots of them. They don't want one a week.
Right. Yeah.
They want to see, you know, they'd be happy with two or three a day. Like they'd be okay with that. And so, and it's hard because it's like, okay, when can I do all of this and write?
Yes.
And I don't know, eat and shower. Yeah. I've already given up most of my self-care. What else can I do here, right?
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about your author journey. I read on your Amazon profile that this book was, 20 years in the making? Is that? So tell us a little bit about that last 20 years and what took so long to get this marvelous book out to the world.
Oh, thank you. So I believe I was in college. I had to have been 20. I had to have been around that age, and maybe 19, but I had started writing it. Mm-hmm. And then as I was writing it, I had this idea in my mind and I saved it. Okay. At that time we had discs. Okay.
Right. Hard disk. Right. I remember. Hey, look, I'm 60. I remember hard disks. Okay. I remember typewriters. So
yeah.
Okay.
So I saved it on that. And I stuck it in my backpack and I left it, my backpack, at my cousin's house and came home to Dallas. So my school was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and my family was out there, and I left it at my cousin's house and went home. And I was like, oh no, I forgot. I was like, okay, let me call my cousin and say, hey, did you look in my bag? Do you see the disc there? I need you to safeguard it for me. He's like, oh yeah, I reformatted that. I was like, what?
You
So he was like, well, was something on there? And I was like, no, it's okay. You know, I was just like, no, I didn't want to make him feel bad. But then I was like, I just left it. So I came back and I told another friend of mine. He's a great guy. And I was like, ah, man, I was writing this book. And I told him that same story. And you know what he told me? He goes, that version wasn't meant to be. It's like, for that to happen the way it happened, that was so random. Like nobody would just ever randomly go find a disc in somebody else's bag and reformat it. Nobody does that.
It's like, why would you do that? Like what?
Yeah. So he was like, keep writing. It just wasn't that one. And so I started to write again. And then I ended up having to leave. I graduated college and then I had to go work. And I just got really just depressed. I was at a really depressing state in my life. And I got through that. And then I got married I was 25, I believe, when I got married. And my wedding night, I got pregnant. So I went through 9 months of being sick. And it just, life took over. I had to go work. No. I had to be a mom. I had to do all these things. And then I got laid off and I started writing again. I picked it back up. But then I got hired back again. So same thing, 3 kids later, I finally hit this really huge milestone and got really successful in my career. So I'm 20 years down the road, COVID hits, and I just kind of feel like I just feel like I was lost. Yeah. And my husband said, didn't you have that book? And I go, oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah.
That was 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's like, well, why don't you start writing? And I was like, I don't know. I guess let me see if I can find it. Like, I mean, it was just that weird. It was buried in my Google Drive somewhere.
Right.
And I found it and I just started it back and didn't stop. And what was interesting was I had an ARC reader who was my neighbor. She said the same. She's like, I'm not even a fantasy reader. She's like, I fall asleep watching, or I fall asleep reading your book. And I wake up like, oh my God, I got to see what the secret did, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I kept reading. I often read at night, kind of before I go to bed. On my Kindle, just because my husband's ill. And so we're having, you know, my life is just a crazy mess right now. And he'll go to bed early. So I'll go on to bed when he goes to bed, but I'm not anywhere close to tired. And so then I read. But usually it's like, okay, if I read 50 pages, we're going to call that a good night and go on to bed. And no, with yours, it was like, what if I, okay, 70, I'll go 90. Okay. It's really getting time for, well, I mean, 100's a nice even number, you know? So yeah, it was good. And the only thing, and this is not against, it ended in such a way that it was like,
yeah,
which is good on your part, because I'm now going to have to get the second book. But part of me is like, really? You left me like, I felt like we were, yeah, I just felt like I'm kind of hung out to dry. And it's like, now I need the next book. So
yeah.
Chop, chop. But you did a really good job with that. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
So we know coming up, you have this business book coming out, mm-hmm. right? And we know that you have, you know, number two and number three coming out, but you have an idea for a spinoff. Are you willing to share any? Go ahead. Tell me what that spinoff is.
Sure. So this one is about breaking generational curses. So that's a big thing in my family that we talk about a lot, is that we were kind of brought up a certain way. And just for example, with women in, you know, the early times of women like having a child when you were younger, they either wanted you to get an abortion or you had the baby, you were sitting somewhere, had the baby, and like someone else raised it. Right.
Right. Right. That's, and then you pretended like it didn't happen.
Happened. Exactly. That's right. Generational curse.
Right.
Especially my family with the money, financial wealth, just financial management, wealth management, and just understanding how to build wealth. That is not taught to us, to own land and do all these things. These are generational curses. And I was like, oh man, we gotta write a book about that.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna put a good spin on it though. It's not gonna be like what I just talked about there, but it's about generations.
Right.
People.
Right. And how, instead of continuing to do the same thing, it's learning how to, I don't know, like move forward.
Forward. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Move forward, yeah. Move upward, move,
yes.
Move beyond. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So I love generational stories. All three of the ones that I've written are generational stories. That's what I do. Sunflowers Beneath the Snow was my first one, and it's about three generations of Ukrainian women. And it came out right before the current Ukrainian crisis, which was just like unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. And we follow these three women and we see their lives and we see how the death of a husband affects all the way down to the granddaughter and, you know, all of those things. So yeah, that same kind of thing. I love the idea of like, it's like a ripple in a pond,
Yeah.
Right. You know, like you touch right here, but it keeps affecting for miles and miles.
Yes.
And then in An Enemy Like Me, I show a man who went off to war, but he had a 4-year-old son and he was gone for 2 years, and how that even affected the son, the way the son parented.
Yep.
30 years later, you know, how that was still a problem. That was still an issue.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, I love the fact that I think that you and I have very similar ideas about, you know, like what books can do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So when someone's reading your book, of course you want them to love the story. I mean, that's like a given. But other than loving your story, you want them to walk away with what? Knowing what? Understanding what? Thinking about what?
Thinking about, I want them to ponder their life. I want them to do some deep introspection. What character did they relate to the most? And if so, why? And what did they wish for that character to do different? And would they do this? Like, what would they have done in that situation? And like you said, if you understand that person and why they did that, and you don't agree with why they did that, is that something that has happened in your life? Is that something that you can do to change? Where can you grow and learn from this story?
Yeah.
By relating to these people and doing all those things.
Yeah. I like that. I love, like I said, you and I have that idea. I feel that literature gives people the chance to experience things that they might not get the chance to experience. And not only that, they get to do it privately.
Yeah.
So, you know, my books often touch on like racism and xenophobia and those kinds of things. And those are not things you can talk about in public. I mean, you know, you can't talk about it, because if your opinion is different than the person you're speaking with, it turns into something big and ugly, and then names are called, and it's horrible because you don't have the opportunity to even try to understand before you're labeled something.
Yeah. Yep.
Both sides. I don't mean, you know, but in a book, if you see something happening, like a racial tension or xenophobia or whatever, you can, in your mind, think, oh, I wouldn't have done that. And then you can think about it. Or you can think, well, why is everyone so upset? I would have done that. And then you look and you think, but would that have been right? Mm-hmm. And you can actually have these like racial xenophobic ideas in your head, and nobody is like beating you over the head with it. And then you can think about it.
Yep.
And maybe shift a little.
You know,
I think literature just has that opportunity to help us see things from a perspective that maybe isn't our own.
Yes. And that's what I was trying to do.
Yeah. Well, you did a good job. You did a really good job.
I wanted my characters to be diverse.
Right.
Incredibly. I wanted a culture to be anything other than European, because that's fantasy. That's been fantasy. And I'm like, this is not fantasy to me, though. I love Egyptian culture. I love Mediterranean culture and their architecture. I'm like, why are these things in these books? They're beautiful. They're so much grander. And the characters and their customs and their culture, I wanted that in that book. I wanted it there, and I wanted it because I didn't want this to be a typical fantasy. Mine was going to stand out for all of these reasons. I couldn't be just fitting in. Couldn't.
Right. Right.
And I wanted people to question those characters. I deliberately, and some characters, I don't know, you have to tell me, Terry. Some of them, I was very vague in their character descriptions. Very vague.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I tend, now I'm probably the wrong person to talk to. I tend not to pay a lot of attention to people who describe the character. It's like, yeah, the character is going to be what the character looks like in my head. And my brain kind of makes things up. And later someone will say, well, you do know that character was, and they'll like say Asian or, and it's like, really? Like, not in my mind, it wasn't, because I kind of create, I do a disservice, I think, probably to the authors by doing that. But I tend to just, it needs to be what my mind needs it to be for the book to work.
Does that
make sense? You know, so vague descriptions never bother me. They don't bother me at all, because I'm going to fill in the gaps and make it, you know, I always create characters. They're alive in my head while I'm reading.
Okay.
So, you know, I hear their voices. I know exactly what accent they have. Like, you know, that's I'm that reader. So.
That's interesting. I described Aiton as a child. And I described him going, right? Growing up, I described him very clearly.
Yeah.
And my mom was like a beta reader for me. And I said, Mom, what ethnicity is Aiton? She just goes, white. I go, really? You didn't read? I said, go read this line. And then I go, and I pointed her to different things. She goes, oh. I said, I clearly described him. What are you talking about? You know, she's like, I said, because that's what fantasy has been for you.
Right.
That's what the books and that you have read have been for you.
I think that's true. I think that often we kind of create in our minds what we're used to. Mm-hmm. But then really there's nothing wrong with that, because if you can get your point across and then they later learn that they were wrong about the character, there isn't any. Do you see what I mean? It's like you even then got your point across again.
Yes.
You know, like there it is again. Like, you know, so I love that. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, talk to you about your books, follow you, learn when the next one's coming out, where do they do this?
So
how do they get up with you?
Okay. So we could get with me on Instagram at movingwithmeaning82. And then YouTube, Moving with Meaning, is my channel.
Okay.
And LinkedIn under Crystal Clark.
Crystal Clark. Not the B, just Crystal Clark.
Yeah, just Crystal Clark.
Okay.
My mom was like, why'd you do that?
Do you have a website?
I do. Yes. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
The website is movingwithmeaning.com.
Okay.
And I have a page there. I'm currently getting it rebranded. I'm like really upping the game on my website, but you can get on there now and you can do contact us.
Okay.
There's a contact me page. There's also a author page where I'll be putting all my updates with my books there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. So tell us just really quickly, Moving with Meaning. What is this?
Okay.
What is this?
So it's about, it really is about this book. It is everything. Oh my gosh.
It's everything.
Yeah. So there are things that happened in my life that I was unfortunate to have bestowed on me. Right. And I believe though, if those things hadn't happened, I wouldn't be who I am today.
I agree.
I am very grateful for them. And I'm grateful for me being resilient in that, as well as me. What happens is I speak to my kids about these things, mm-hmm. and they connect with me on a completely different level because they understand me so much more than anybody has, because I'm able to communicate things that have happened to me, and the way that I am parenting them, I'm communicating with them about it. And my daughter, I was like in the car with my daughter one day and I said, I need to come up with a name for a company. I don't even know. So she just looked to me to the left, and she's 14. And she looked at me and she goes, Moving with Meaning, Mom. And I was like, What? Why do you say that? I was like, I mean, that's great. She's like, well, because everything that you do, Mom, has meaning. Everything. The way you, when you speak to us, it's a purpose. Like there's a purpose behind everything that you teach, how you speak to us when you are telling us a particular topic or teaching. I mean, it's just everything. She says, and I'm inspired by that.
Wow. So how could you not call it Moving with Meaning, right? Like at that point,
she guilted me.
It's a done deal. No, that's great. That's great. Well, I want to thank you so much, Crystal, for being on. I loved the book. Listeners, get out there and buy the book. It's really good. If you love character-driven fiction, this is that, and you're going to love it. So thank you for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch. Tune in next Tuesday for another podcast episode.